Hey everyone, I'm Tom Long and welcome to the next episode of The Whistle Post, where we cover the world of workforce, economic, and community development with the people who are making it happen. Last year, Connecticut became the 19th state to pass legislation that legalizes and regulates the adult use of cannabis. The cannabis industry has the potential to generate thousands of good-paying jobs, including jobs as sales clerks, drivers, growers, manufacturing workers, and in management. Connecticut employers will need to plan for recruiting, training, and developing workers to advance their businesses. To help us scratch the surface on workforce issues in the cannabis industry, we're joined by Eric Davis, Chief Learning Officer at Grown In, a resource for cannabis industry news and information. Grown In provides detailed reporting as well as online training and learning for cannabis businesses. Eric has founded four businesses and has over 20 years' experience in social impact entrepreneurship, where he has built sustainable systems to help businesses realize their vision. In this conversation, Eric provides an overview of employment trends and opportunities for future workers in the cannabis industry. And now, here's the next episode of The Whistle Post. Let's get started. Eric, thank you so much for being with me here today to talk about cannabis and training for the workforce within the industry. As you know, Connecticut is really in its infancy of launching a cannabis industry, and there are a lot of questions out there in the marketplace. So I appreciate you being here to provide some feedback.
Thanks, Tom. I'm happy to be a guest. Thanks so much.
Thank you. I'd like to start with a little bit of your background. I understand that you've worked for 20 plus years in the traditional K through 12 education system. So what brought you over to training people in the cannabis industry?
So I was a teacher and coach, and then I founded and built four education companies, two for-profit, two nonprofit, including an inquiry and project-based high school. And we did all that in Chicago, and then we licensed our curriculum nationally. And I spent the last several years of my career really training teachers, schools, and districts all around the country. So I was doing the kind of training work, you know, similar in some capacity. And then when COVID hit, I started working on another new project to maybe bring a healthcare app into education. And right around that time, it was like, this is going to be an enormous uphill battle. And at the same time, my friend and the founder of Grown In, Brad, he told me what he was doing in the cannabis industry. We'd crossed paths for years in ed tech. And he asked me what I thought the industry needed. I said, cultures of excellence, quality control through learning. And then, you know, here you go. A few months later, we started building compliance and professional growth.
Wow, that's quite a journey, and it looks like it's got a big future ahead of it. You know, as I mentioned, in Connecticut, the cannabis industry is really in its infancy, and I would appreciate your insights in what you've seen in other states with people that are considering working within the industry. Have you seen or heard about people having preconceived biases or notions about working in the industry?
Yes, I've heard them. I've experienced them. So first, I'll answer the general question, and then I'll answer with an anecdote. So we're headquartered in Illinois, but we're approved in Illinois and in Massachusetts and in Michigan. We're working. We're submitted to the state licensure in Colorado, and we've got our first client in Montana. So we're seeing multiple states. And every state is a little bit different. Obviously, that's one of the unique things about this industry. And so, whereas you think about like alcohol post-prohibition, everything was very clear. You know, if you could sell beer, or you're selling beer and wine, or you're selling spirits, or you're selling, you know, hard liquor, whatever it is. Well, the cannabis industry is figuring all of that stuff out. And so, you know, you're talking about a really emerging market, which the industry is not matched with a whole professional pipeline yet. So a lot of people are going to come into the industry either with a bias or with a lack of know-how. That said, a lot of people are really excited to work in emerging markets, and they have their own reason to want to work in the industry. So what I see is this: even though cannabis is normalized, it still carries a stigma to a lot of people because you have a long history in this country in all sorts of ways. As a career educator, I can tell you the moment I updated my LinkedIn page to show that I'm Chief Learning Officer of an ancillary non-leaf touching business in the cannabis industry, 100% of my contract and advisory roles ended. So I was on advisory boards, I have a lot of experience. You know, I provide valuable support to people. 100% of those public contracts ended. So that's just a, you know, personal one. That said, when you think about it from the flip side, my favorite part about building this organization and working in this industry is that we're all experts from other industries. Because if you've been working for more than 6 years, you're an expert in another industry.
You know, I believe that a lot of people talk about the occupations in the cannabis industry and the new licenses and requirements, but the industry is going to support a lot of traditional occupations from marketing to accounting to human resources.
That's it, exactly. So we actually exist in both as a solution for HR and compliance and also as professional education. But that means that our primary contact is HR and compliance. So everyone who's in HR and compliance in cannabis came from another industry.
Gotcha. So when you look at the skill requirements for new occupations within the industry, can you comment at all about the soft skills that are required, what employers are generally looking for?
Yes, I'll comment specifically. So if you think about critical hard skills are and like SOP related, and they're all depending on the operator license type. So if you're cultivation or manufacturing, retail, transport, testing, those are all going to be much more unique hard skills. In the retail, for example, in the dispensary environment, you know, things like listening, asking questions, attention to detail, just like random acts of kindness and patience, those things really matter because you're talking about a retail industry where, again, the stigma matters, what people are walking in with. If you have someone who's got a medical challenge and they've never used cannabis, but they're recommended from a medical professional and this is their first time at a dispensary, or you have a bunch of people who are coming in for adult use and they've been going to their guy for the last 20 years, you're talking about cultivating trust in a relationship. That's very different than coming in and buying shoes.
Right. Absolutely. You know, regardless of industry, one of the things that we've witnessed in workforce development, people are looking at careers more than just jobs, and they're interested in where they can grow and where they can build their career from where they currently are. Can you provide any examples of what somebody might be able to do, or are there certain companies that are better suited to support career growth for an individual?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, because like one thing in this industry is, I mentioned there's all these different license types and there's all these different roles potentially, you know, which we were just talking about. So one way to think about this is vertically integrated organizations. Those are the ones who they grow, they process, they sell. So in an experience like that, you actually, some companies invite employees to train and work in dispensaries, the cultivation, you know, with the plants and at different levels of the organizational hierarchy. That's one where there's really interesting mobility inside of an organization. There's also this new mobility that's beginning to open up across different companies in a region and now nationally. Then I'd say like there's, you know, the more distinct like passion related leveling up where you might see someone in their career, which let's say they get into the adult recreational space because they can get in it, you know, the first job, $15 to $21 an hour. And within a year, they find themselves really gravitating toward medicinal use, therapeutic use. And then they're getting, you know, medicinal training, they're getting basically early, you know, kind of nursing, they can do nursing training, they can do all of these tracks, and suddenly they find themselves running a medicinal dispensary or providing support to medicinal clients only. So I think there's a lot of room to level up. It just depends on breadth. I think the key is just that there is room for growth. And it's a question of if you're becoming, you know, like a master of many parts and you can work across, you know, you can be a value in a vertically integrated company in a number of roles, or if you find specific skill area in which you want to grow, which the industry is fostering. And as we said, there's the traditional roles which happen to apply to cannabis also, whether it's marketing, sales, you know, HR, whatever, or it's the more medical cannabis or canna cuisine or women's health, or, you know, there's all of these new, these jobs didn't even exist 5 years ago.
So what I'm really thinking when I'm hearing your words is that there's a great opportunity regardless of your point of where you begin in the industry. And it seems like there are opportunities at the whole end of a career spectrum for people to enter, move up, and move around within the industry.
I think that's a fair interpretation in terms of if you have professional mobility in general, I think you can have good professional mobility in this industry. I do think from the equity perspective, I mean, it's that's an uphill battle in every single way, because you're talking about weaknesses in the system in every single way. So it's going to take some work to empower. And I think we're going to get to this question maybe later, but there are some really important efforts to try to have better on-ramps, better training, better employee outreach. So we can come back to that. But yes, once you're in, I think there are, you know, good chances to continue to grow.
You know, across the country, you see in the news right now, employers are, you know, posting signs for help wanted. They're, you know, talking about how it's hard to find the workers that they're looking for. There's talk about, you know, mature workers retiring. Are you hearing from employers or seeing within the industry companies having a hard time finding workers? Do you see a worker shortage in the industry?
Yeah. So, you know, I don't think the great resignation applies to the cannabis industry yet. I do think that it is very local. The pain points are local. So what we see are some dispensaries in some areas, they have no trouble finding workforce. In other areas, like, for example, just the short answer is yes, some people do. But I think the harder part is actually retaining employees. And this gets to the critical nature of training. And again, how, you know, one of your best returns on investment is if you cultivate an environment of excellence and a culture of learning and a culture of training and collaboration where people are, they recognize that their growth is connected to that, and that's merit-based. And their growth is also, you know, what they're learning is tied to their KPIs and their performance measures. And I think in the case, you can really do that in this industry. So yes, I don't want to, yes. I do think it's hard to hire and retain. There are high levels of churn, but this industry, unlike some others, does have some cool things going for it, and people want to work in it still. So I don't think it's facing the same critical gap as some other industries.
So would you consider that retaining workers is one of the biggest competitive barriers, or one of the biggest barriers to building a competitive workforce?
Yes. I think it's really important how you build, and, you know, again, this is one of the complicated things about the industry. We're talking about some rapidly growing companies. You're talking about some new companies. And, you know, in the case of some of the larger companies, they have huge, you know, huge investment to grow these companies. So they're under the same pressures to hit, you know, sales KPIs and sales returns and to grow. Well, that's a hard culture. You know, when you're trying to build business that fast. And on the other side, think about it from the startups who are new to the industry, who may be their first time running a business. Well, that time, those folks on the other side, they're just trying to learn how to do this. They don't even have turnkey systems. So I do think culture is really important to build. I think it's, you know, challenging to do, but it is exciting to see that there is energy toward it in our industry. So I'm glad to see that. Like the fact that we're even talking today, this means people are aware that training needs to happen in the industry, and that's something that matters.
Yeah, I do believe that people believe that it's training's essentials. There might be some question of how is the best way to get started. But when I think about training, I think about two different things. One is the, you know, the license requirements for us in Connecticut that are going to come down from the state that are going to dictate these are the skills or this is the training that's required to get a license. But I also think about the professional competency that's going to be needed to prepare people to work in this area. What do you think was most important to be covered in that area?
So this is interesting because there's huge gaps between like between the people who are recreational users and the professional industry. And what by that I mean, if you ask somebody who's been, you know, a recreational pot smoker for 20 years about the anatomy of the plant or the human body and the endocannabinoid system or cannabinoids and terpenes and the range of products in the market and methods of delivery and impairments and side effects, and they're going to give you such a general answer that's going to sound like you're hanging out, you know, in the woods talking at night. That is not the level of professional skills that needs to be delivered. And so all of that stuff, like the range of products, the human body, literally the anatomy, the methods of delivery, it is the technology is vastly different today. It has come such a long way, and you can make no assumptions about what a client knows. You always have to assume that they don't know the impact and the impairments, that they don't understand the methods of delivery and the timing of it and the side effects of it and the potential impairments of it. It's our job in the industry to inform that, you know, to share that as a way of constantly learning and building a smarter, more knowledgeable client base. That's the goal. There's also a huge amount of information that just has to be, you have to dot the I's and the T's on the laws, the procedures, inventory management, waste management, point of sale, audits and investigations. There are, security. There is no shortcut on any of that. Again, this is not, we're not just selling shoes and shoelaces. We're selling, in this industry, we're growing, manufacturing, selling, and educating about a product which, yes, has its obvious benefits, but also has its obvious potential shortfalls. And if we're not honest about all of that and educating for all of that, then we're doing a disservice to the industry and to the market. So, I think there's a fair amount of those key things that I kind of touched on.
No, you did a real nice job covering a broad swath of topics that we could probably talk a half hour on just on those. But it seems like it's an amazing life cycle, an amazing outreach of touch points that are all very important within this industry. Thinking about the technical skills, where you've seen cannabis previously legalized in other states, are there certain occupational trainings that have been more in demand in those states?
The one that I'm seeing the most across multiple states is what I generally call responsible vendor training. And it's this, somewhere between 2 and 8 hour, bucket. And I'll kind of repeat some of these things because this is what it is. First and foremost, you're going to have the laws, the regulatory environment. And that includes everything from the, DUI laws to what you can carry, what you can possess, where you can use it, and then it's going to have all of the kind of safety impairment stuff, your waste management, all your inventory, that sort of like how the state regulates the product and the employee's responsibility and fidelity to that process. That is non-negotiable. And so whether it's proactive in some states where they're like, hey, in order to get a badge or an agent card and work, you have to do this, or it's reactive. Hey, we trust that you're going to do it right. But when you do it wrong, slap on the wrist, you got to take this class. That all kind of falls into the responsible vendor training bucket. We're seeing demand from actual operators to do much more of understanding the plant, the human body, the relationship between the plant and the body, the medicinal uses and therapeutic uses, more of these niche understandings. And as I mentioned, like product is what they're actually selling. So whether that product is a pen or it's leaf or it's a topical, there's a lot to learn. And if you don't have a knowledgeable sales force, you are not going to retain customers. So I think kind of in those orders, I see those things being things that are in demand. And that means that when I say in demand, I mean both the operators and the regulators are requiring conversations about or some attention to these issues.
So where companies are putting the responsible vendor training in place up front, is that positioned as something that all employees should take at some point or when they start their work?
Depends on the state. So if you're in, this country is in a fascinating process of state by state rollout. So in Illinois, for example, and in Massachusetts, in order to work, well, in Illinois, if you're going to work in a dispensary, you have to get an agent badge, a responsible vendor training course. If you're in Massachusetts, any license type, manufacturer, transport, dispensary, they all have to do the responsible vendor training. If you're in Colorado, you only have to do it in a dispensary if there's a violation. The training itself, 80% is the same, of the content that's required to be covered, even though the laws are localized and all that. But the requirement and the timing of it, proactive versus reactive, that one is state state specific. Where I think this is also really unique comes back to the organization and their culture of learning. So if you're a multi-state operator and you're required to provide training in one state, your default is then to raise the bar in all of your states nationally. So you choose the highest bar for your company, and then you train all of your employees on that bar. That actually, again, goes back to some of the earlier things we're talking about, which is like, how is the industry growing in terms of training? How do we raise the bar in terms of understanding and building education? And so some of the, I'd say the multi-state operators from their own, it's in their own benefit to get that right sooner. So it's spreading, you know, it's growing in multiple ways. It's interesting.
That is very interesting. I think you might've answered my next question, but I'm going to ask anyway, in case you take it in a different direction. But as you look at the cannabis industry, is there anything that you see as good news or positive developments that are happening, you know, right now today?
Yes. I'd focus on like two or three things. One is, I think that there is at least intention. I wish it was constantly actualized, but I do believe that there is a genuine intention to, we can never repair the damage that's been done in this country, but we can try to do things better and invite people in who have been, who've had their lives and their communities decimated by the war on drugs. So I do think that that is a state level, and that I see movements both locally in communities and with small organizations at the grassroots level, working with legislative leaders. I do think that that's happening at some level. It's still highly inefficient, but there's something there. I also see some of these larger companies using their corporate social responsibility programs to do some really good stuff around workforce readiness. And that means partnering with community colleges. It means funding community college programs. It means funding local organizations who are doing the work in their local communities. And again, I'm a big believer in local impact. So it's great that these larger companies have to put money back in because of state requirements. But in the end, that work gets done because of relationships and people on the grassroots level. And then the third thing I see where is a really a cool thing is like the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce, for example. They are actually using state funding to reimburse professional learning for cannabis industry now. That's an amazing step forward, because it literally reimburses funds, which some of these companies can barely pay, which means they can choose to train instead of skimping on training. So I think that there's, you know, those are three examples of really good news in workforce readiness. There's obviously more, but those are some real things to hang a hat on.
No, that's great. You know, in a lot of ways, I'm so thankful for your time. And I feel like we're just scratching the surface and could do a deeper dive on a number of these issues. And it really seems like there is growing opportunity for a workforce from all levels and all communities to get engaged with this new industry.
Yeah, I think so. And Tom, I so appreciate being a guest. It's very, very cool to speak with you. And I'm excited about the fact that you consider the industry something that you guys really want to be learning about and getting ahead of before it suddenly turned on.
Absolutely. We're looking forward to trying to be helpful and support as many people as possible. Eric, thank you so much for your time today. Greatly appreciate it. And I look forward to staying in touch with you.
Thank you, Tom.
That wraps another episode of The Whistle Post. Again, I would like to thank Eric Davis for providing a glimpse into the workforce training issues around the emerging cannabis industry, which has the potential to generate thousands of good-paying jobs. Lastly, I would like to thank you for listening. I encourage you to subscribe to The Whistle Post on Apple, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Until next time, this is Tom Long at The Whistle Post.